What's good, people? Let's get Jester in the building.
Wow.
Yes. Yes, man. How you doing?
I'm good, bro. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. Got a co-host, Mick, joining as well shortly. He's also called Tom, so it could get confusing. So just call him Mick.
Nice. Doing these things reminds me of when comedians had to do Zoom gigs. Zoom stand-up gig?
I've never attended one.
No, you're right not to, because it's fucking shit. Fucking harrowing.
I can imagine, man.
You do your stand-up set on a Zoom call, and then, no one would laugh, and then you'd shut the computer and you'd just be in your room. It was awful.
I was gonna ask about that, man, because obviously, like, the last time we spoke was like kind of, you know, right in the thick of it, 2020, so I expect you were doing a lot of that at the time, and I see you've kind of got back into the live gigs thick and fast, right? Like, your reels on Instagram are so good, man. Like, how's that all been? Is it like you never left? Were you a little bit rusty?
I was rusty for the first time I did a show, and I went back to I was just desperate to get on stage, so I drove to like Southend or something, and just for about 20 seconds on stage I was a little rusty, and then it all came back with a vengeance.
good man. What's good, Mick?
You all right, mate? How you doing?
Yeah, not too bad.
Figure out the lighting.
Yeah, you got to get the lighting right.
That Christmas tree. Oh no. Light.
How's that? It looks dark as fuck, but what are we gonna do?
It's right.
How you doing, man?
What's going on?
Yeah, you good. Have I got real janky internet connection as usual?
Standard.
You good?
Yeah, for people that are just joining, welcome Jester Jacobs, returning, second appearance. It's good to see you again, man. So we were just kind of talking a bit about like returning to live shows and all of that kind of thing. Talk a bit about your latest project as well with Jack Dance, Mood Solutions. We'll get into that as well. But how have you been in general, man, like since we last caught up? Like, what's new?
First of all, thanks for letting me come on your Insta Live.
Yeah, man. It's yeah, we got nothing better to do, right?
Very exciting times. I've been good, gravy, trying to be self-employed with some self-respect, same old.
Yeah, definitely, man. But watching some of your reels you've been posting, your like shorts for your stand-up comedy. Do you mind if we talk a bit about the stand-up comedy? I know you're here to plug the album, but obviously, like,
let's talk about everything, man.
Yes.
Let's get stored.
Yeah. People, if you want to send some questions in the meantime, we'll get around to answering them. Feel free to virtual heckle us and Joe. And Joe, feel free to tear into anyone heckling you, you know, virtually, because that'll be jokes, right?
Yeah, just to heckle a username. I don't know. Why not?
Oh, man. But, anyone watching now, I just welcome you all to heckle us, because, I mean, you know, we're doing this podcasting thing. Just fucking, you know, just join in. Interactive. That's the good thing about doing it over IG Live. Do you know what I mean? We can kind of, like, leverage, the audience that we've got. We don't have to pre-record it. And if we fuck up, everyone just sees it. We don't have to edit it out. It's great.
Yeah, I like doing it with multiple people. I've tried to go live on Instagram before, and it's always very depressing. I don't like it.
Oh, man. But, those reels...
A laptop or a computer without ejaculating at the end of it. You know what I'm saying?
You still can. It's early days.
Okay. Thanks for that. I will.
Oh, man. But,
that lost us about 5 viewers, that comment. So I probably...
He had some wanking to do. That's probably why. And we weren't sexy enough. But anyway, I mean, like, those reels you've been doing, man, are so good. Just to give like just a bit of kind of flavor into what you can do. And I don't know how you can do that, like stand in front of people night after night and put up with kind of like drunken hecklers and stuff. And what I've seen, you really do take it in your stride. Do you know what I mean? Especially like, you know, the stag parties and the kind of incoherent, like, just like waffle that people come out with. So has there been any kind of like standout moments so far returning to the stage post-pandemic?
You know what? Like, I think because everything shifted to video and reels and like just fucking plugging content constantly, I feel like audiences now want to get involved more than ever before, which is, you know, good for the odd reel, but it means it's harder to actually get material out. I seem to have a face that people just want to shout at when I'm on set. I don't know what it is. Something about me triggers a lot of audience members, apparently.
But that's good for the kind of, you know, the interaction, though, I guess. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It helps to have such a, you know, a face that people just react to, I guess.
Indeed. And that's what I have, clearly.
But no, man, on a serious note, I don't know how you do it, and props to you for doing it, because it's hilarious. And anyone, you know, who hasn't checked it out yet, go and check out Joe's stand-up and stuff. So you've got a gig coming up soon, haven't you?
I've got a gig coming up most evenings. I've got one in Reading. Anyone in Reading? Long.
Are you like a resident like stand up in a particular venue? Do you travel around? Do you just get what, you know, do what you can?
Yeah, I go wherever will have me, man. I play most of the clubs, like the big chains, the Glees, Comedy Store, Top Secret.
Crazy.
Yeah, man.
What's the kind of as a comedian, obviously you do it for the love of doing it, but do you have like an end game or like an objective, somewhere you want to be? Like, do you want to break into kind of, I know you've done, I saw you on like that, the Harry Hill thing like years ago and stuff, and you've had like, you know, exposure on the TV, but is there like somewhere you want to take it eventually, or are you just happy doing what you love for a living?
Well, that's a good question. To be honest with you, what would be really nice is if I can just cultivate a little fan base and be able to do a tour to them, and you know, that's about the limits of what I'm after these days. Anything more is a bonus, but it's great being able to perform comedy full stop. But I wouldn't like to be like a circuit veteran, overweight, but press, just going through the motions when I'm 50. I'd like to have some sort of safety net in the form of a viable career by then, hopefully.
Yeah, man, I can imagine. I mean, obviously, like, no disrespect for people still doing it then, but it's, yeah, I can imagine it's quite, you know, long, arduous time, you know, to still be doing something after that long, not necessarily, not getting anywhere, because you could argue that by doing it, by definition, is making it, because you're doing what you love.
Yeah.
It'd be easy for me to say that, do you know what I mean? Because I... you know, it's going through the kind of the trials and tribulations. It's just a whole different plight for a comedian to do that, I guess, full time.
I'd say it's for a rapper in England.
Oh, mate, I was going to say, especially in like UK hip hop.
Yeah.
So juggling too. How is that? Because do you ever try to like ambush your comedy audience with the raps? And if so, do they get it?
I do it every show, man. That's the fucking act.
Yeah.
Really, force people to listen to my rap against their will. One way to get audience.
Do you find that people kind of like take to that? You know, the, because obviously you started off, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you were making like YouTube videos a while ago. You know, like the comedy videos, like the one with, well, it was actually filmed by a dog. If the, you know, the YouTube, the description is, you know, is accurate, but like stuff like that, you know what I mean? And then obviously you did stuff with like Moose Funk Squad and your solo stuff respectively, and but is it something that you is it, it do you have two very kind of separate audience, like fan bases for both?
Well, I think I do actually. Like I don't have too many fans, but I got like a different group of fans. Some people just know me for comedy, like older people might know me for comedy, and then there'll be the odd reprobate that comes to a show and they're going moose, so they know about Moose Funk. And then there's other people that just know about some fucking random, you know, some random song from years ago that's like no one would know. Like I remember a guy showed up to a gig who was watching Rude Tube from prison, and he saw the dog video and he came to a show in Camden, and I was like, wow, I'm really in the right people.
Oh, but if anyone's you know, if anyone hasn't seen that, then make sure to go and check it out, because it's such a good concept. Like recently I bought a dog, like not too long ago, so it's even more kind of, you know, profound to watch that now.
Man, I'm very happy with that song. It's had a nice life.
Yeah, it must be like, what, like 12 years old now or something?
Getting on a bit, but like it got a lot of love at the time, and like Clams Casino shared it, Imogen Heap shared it. See,
you used an Imogen Heap track, you sampled it, right? I can't remember which.
The Imogen Heap song originally, Clams Casino sampled it for a Lil B song, and then I used it. So it kind of gone a bunch of people, and I don't think it was officially released because of sample issues, but they both shared it. So it's been a...
But yeah, carrying on with the music. So you recently released your new album on Revolg Records, Moose Solutions. So that's the entire project is solely produced by Blar affiliate Jack Danz. Yeah, incredible producer. Gives it a very like unique and moody atmosphere for you to rap on. Like beats and bars are crazy. You may be able to hear it, but I've got it on very softly in the background. But so what was the process behind this album? You recorded it during lockdown, right?
Yeah, man. I in the lockdown, when I had no work, no money, I was in touch with Jack, and he kept sending me beats, and I was just vaping a lot of skunk and drinking a lot of red wine and having a great time. I wrote it, had a lot of fun. And I think it's the album I'm most proud of, because it's just, I really felt like it was like an apocalyptic time. So I kind of wanted to just make, I treated it like, what if this was the last thing I ever made? And now, like it might be. I don't really have much to say at the moment. I think that kind of says where I'm at, every part of it.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the album description on Bandcamp, I'm going to read it out just to give some context. So, written during the worldwide COVID lockdowns and recorded in one take, Moose Solutions is a record from a rapper with nothing left to lose. The project was concocted while under self-imposed isolation and powered by porridge and strong hash.
Oh yeah, porridge, yeah.
Fully produced by Defenders of Style, Blar affiliate powerhouse Jack Danz, the LP depicts the story and subsequent summit meetings of a failed state and our desperate protagonist leader at the helm, desperately grasping for power with the promise of Moose Solutions. The best way to describe this album is life-changing. Larry David meets Colonel Gaddafi with the empathy of Kim Jong II. So, yeah, I mean, great depiction. I would say that, yeah, very accurate description of the album. So was it like a, did you have a concept in mind when you wrote it? Or was that just kind of done retrospectively? Because I'm not necessarily getting like a linear story listening to it, but maybe I need to go back to it. But it's sick all the same.
No, it's not a linear story, but you know what it was? The concept, it did sort of come to me as I was making it, like the vibe. If you listen to the bars, obviously there's no story as such, but there's a lot of references to like political power and like dictators and shit like that. And the reason for the cover is, and the whole vibe is, like I said, it was a bit dystopian. The world felt dystopian at that time. Felt like everything was sort of coming off the rails, you know, so that was my headspace. And then when it came to the cover, I was like thinking, ultimately, what does any creative artist really want? They just want to be known. They want to get their face about, get a bit of attention and hype, and where does that go right at the end? And I figured it would be like a political leader forcing you by force to respect this craft and this, that's what that was about, you know. I could have just had the picture of me posing a street or whatever, but I figured I'd go for the political activist shit.
It works, man. It looks really dope. I love the cover art. But yeah, like the first track, Dawn French, really like sets the tone for the album. Like it's a really like dark, ominous bass and like esoteric lyrics. It's like buy, purchase, capitalism, just like basically just like reeling off the concept of the album in a beginning. And like I watched the video as well. It's really like lo-fi and greasy, and the ending of it where you just sat like chatting breeze with two old ladies on the park bench was like a nice touch. So
yeah,
did you film that during lockdown as well? Because like the mundane nature of the conversation would imply that was the case.
Yeah, man, I did. It was in the middle of lockdown. We were in a, I don't know where the was, somewhere in South London. That was it. Like I wanted it to all be, like you said, kind of lo-fi, a bit greasy, just like kind of bleak. That was it, man.
Yeah, Dan's is your man for that, right? He's definitely got a very unique production style. And did you always have him in mind for the project?
No, man. I it's crazy because the last time I saw Jack was 2008 in a rap battle competition in Leeds. I haven't seen him since, but, you know, been in touch or whatever. We've got a mutual respect. And, yeah, we were just chatting and the ball started rolling very quickly. And I was just in a headspace to just make stuff quickly. I just wanted everything to be as it was. You know, I was very inspired by kind of Fleetwood Mod style of just going with what you have, all the recordings from the album. I kept like most of the original recordings. A few of the songs were just one take. So in the press release, I say one take, but it's more just, but all of them were done in one take. Like Interest, that song Interest, that was done in one take. All verses, hooks, everything done straight. And there's a few times in the recording you can hear, sounds like I've got marbles in my mouth and shit like that. And I just wanted to keep it. I didn't want it to be polished.
Any reason why it did sound like you had marbles in your mouth? I mean, the Freudian slip there. Like, why did you have marbles in your mouth, mate?
Just for it.
Just all in.
It's just like, I mean, the truth is, I was experimenting a lot with different styles of delivery and vocal performance. Like, I listened back to some of my older stuff recently, and I hate it all. I sound so whiny. And it's forced and like, but with this one, I really wanted to set a different tone. You know, I said it before, it's kind of like a reintroduction of what I want to do, basically.
Yeah, man.
Have abilities, writing wise, to kind of do what I wanted to do. I wanted it to be like, make some serious points, be hilarious at times, be fucking stupid. I wanted to say the dumbest stuff possible. And I wanted it. I like working with one producer solely, so it was cool that Jack was able to just do his thing. I just left it to him to do.
Yeah, man. I can imagine it made the process like come together easier. And this is, you know, when I say this, I mean like, no, this is a compliment, but like a lot of it reminded me of like a lot of old like Trelly stuff. And I was listening to it, just the vibe I got from it, and that's like the ultimate compliment from me, man. But
absolutely, big up Trelly.
Yeah, exactly. It's, as you say, that kind of like, it's a little bit self-deprecating, but like funny, dumb, but clever, if that makes sense. It's just like, it's just there's a very like specific kind of vibe you get from his music. And like, I hear a lot of that in this, and it's, really, really enjoyable listen, man.
Thank you. And just on another note, something while I remember is in terms of the writing process and how it all came together is, like, I've always felt like rap is such a young man's game, and what happens when you get old and you don't make it. And then what I realized with making this album is, this is what happens when you get old and don't make it. You make a project like this, you know, you just have all your facilities. You're able to rhyme amazingly and say dumb shit. And this is the result, you know. Does that make any sense?
It's almost like you're trying less, but Do you know what I mean? Just try less. But yeah, that's mate, you would attest to that as well, right?
Yeah.
So again, my funny notes all over the shop.
I was just saying, man, like, do you find that as well, being like with, you know, making music, your latest stuff, and you kind of, you know yourself better as an artist, and you can just kind of like try less, and as a result of that, you make a better, you're not overthinking, perhaps. That's basically what I was getting
at. I think so, yeah. I mean, it's funny you were saying that you don't like your old stuff, because I was listening, I went back, I listened to like Before Nurse and Truffle Barons and Chick Looped Up, and you can definitely notice, and I think it's the same with my stuff, where like your most recent stuff, you've definitely like found your sound, or you like found the vibe that like suits, you know, your voice, and like you do like, you know, like a lot of punchline rap, just it's like a good focus on like the flow.
Yeah.
Oh, he's gone. the tension. What was he saying?
Got the 20 emoji going on. Look at that.
It's right.
We'll never know. It's all gone fucking crazy.
Yeah.
I'd say I like my stuff from Truffle Barons. Truffle Barons is still solid, and Grindfulness, I'm really proud of that record. It took a long time, but Chicken Souped Up, I made like literally in the grips of horrific depression. So that's, I did that as a terrible album, but it is what it is.
Yeah, but that's part of the journey, I guess, man. And it's, if you hadn't have made it, then you would never have made Mood Solutions. Do you know what I mean? It's like, that's the journey you have to go on. The self-reflection. I mean, you could just be a complete egomaniac, be like, everything I put out is incredible. But I don't think, you don't really meet many artists like that. I think a lot of artists, musicians tend to say the same thing, like, or something similar at least. Like, oh, you know, I'm proud of certain early projects, but then like this one, I just want to completely like disown, although acknowledge the fact that without it, you wouldn't have, you know, you arguably wouldn't have made the music you later on went on to make. But yeah, it's a sick album, man. It sounds great. And yeah, for the record, Truffle Barons is probably like one of my favorite projects of your Luke Pratt. It's very like, very like decadent, mafioso kind of, yeah, it's good stuff, man.
Thank you. I like it too. That one came together real easy as well. Big up Luca Brasi.
Yeah, definitely, man. Are you making... So I know, Mick, you wanted to ask this as well, but like Moose Solutions, obviously the tie-in with, you know, Moose Funk. Mm-hmm. I've seen the Moose Solutions framework that you posted on Instagram, but in your own words, what does Moose Solutions mean to you?
What does it mean to me? Man, there's no way of answering this question without sounding like it's wanker, but I'm gonna try. Moose Funk Squad, yeah, is just a bunch of absolute waste men that still rap. We're fucking old as fuck. Our careers have gone nowhere. We're all a shambles, and that's what Moose Funk Squad is. So to take it on a next level, Moose Solutions is, if you could package that and try and sell it, that's what it is, for better or worse. And because of the way that it's been packaged up, it looks pretty good. It seems appealing, Moose Solutions, but it obviously isn't. I wouldn't suggest it, but that's what we're selling.
Emperor's New Clothes, then, basically. It's just like...
Exactly, yeah, exactly. It's like going with the communism vibe. It's all destined to fail, basically, whatever it is.
Now, ironically, it's a really good album, though, so, like...
Yeah.
Don't need to worry about it, man. You had a glowing review from the Irish Farmers Monthly as well.
That's right. For the record.
We listened to the record. Brilliant, man. Brilliant. But, yeah, like I was saying, like naturally being you, like the comedy kind of bleeds into the raps. But, like, do you ever... you know, I talked about a little bit earlier about like you've got two like kind of separate fan bases, one specifically for your know you for the UK hip hop side of things, and then your comedy, the older people who know you specifically for comedy. Do you ever make like a conscious decision to try to keep these two practices separate, or is it always just like, you know, whatever, like if one kind of comes into the other or vice versa, I'm just happy with that?
Well, when I was starting comedy, I didn't rap on stage, and for about 5 years I was, you know, complaining about my girlfriend or whatever, and then pretending to be like a bad man MC the next day, and it all just seemed like a disconnect from reality. So
yeah,
the plan is always to try and just make it one thing, and I feel like this album is a little bit closer to that. That's where I'm heading, you know. I'd like it all to just be one thing. And back in the day, I was trying desperately to figure out a way to make it work as two separate things together. But now I just have to accept it is what it is. You either get it or you don't.
Yeah, man. And I think it seems a lot more like organic, like the comedy aspect within this project, because it's a bit more seamless now. As you said, like your early stuff was very much like set out to make like a comedy record. So it's like, clearly the concept is a funny concept. I'm a comedy rapper, I'm going to make funny raps, right? Whereas now, like, it's kind of, it's incidental if you're making rap music that so happens to be funny, because you're injecting your personality into the bars. Yeah. So it's a lot more kind of organically seamless. Do you have a favourite track on the album?
Can I just say you're very intelligent. That's a very insightful observation you just made. You're absolutely...
Thank you. I'm just blagging it, man. I'm thick as shit, but I appreciate the compliment. Do you have a favorite track on the album?
My favorite tracks are probably Dawn French and Incorrect. Dawn French, like a lot of the songs, I just wrote them on the spot, and I would spend a night having a drink, just like listening to the music, just writing and having a great time. And Dawn French just came together real quick. And I just knew, that's it, that's how I set it off, that's that, that's the one. And then Incorrect is my favourite, because I wrote that thinking, what would be a song that would be the most fun to perform for me as a performer? And that's kind of what I ended up with, because it's kind of like quite minimal.
Yeah.
Pretty funky, and it's quite funny as well, and really stupid.
And you did the video for that as well, on like the rock wall, didn't you? Like...
Yeah, right. That's right. But it's interesting, because I think I know what people might like, but the reality is never the same. Like Incorrect, I thought that's the one. People are going to love that, but it's not popping off like I thought it would. But Dawn French, people like that one. That one's doing all right.
Yeah, I would say like as a rap, like as like a, you know, I guess as someone who enjoys rap music and listens to it and digests it on a daily basis, that is something that, you know, instant screw face. I was like, yeah, this instrumental is insane. The raps, and it's a great way to set up the album. Incorrect's a really good track, great closer. But again, I think there's like maybe a layer of context that, or like you would need to maybe listen to the album as a whole to appreciate it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. But but whereas Dawn French has that instant like, oh yeah, that is the one, man. But again, it's all subjective, isn't it? And I guess where you're so close to the creative process, you know, and it's so personal to you as well. You're always going to have like favorite tracks that in your mind you kind of feel that, all right, yeah, as you said, this is going to pop. But until you put it out there and get feedback from it, you're never going to know. But what's the reception been like for the album generally so far?
Man, it's been really good from everyone that's heard it. It's just about, I'm just trying to get it out to more people. That's the thing. Usually, by the time I'm ready with an album, I'm done with it, and I don't even want to see it or hear about it or promote it on any level again. But with this, I feel like it's... a fine piece of work, and I'm trying to push it as much as possible.
Yeah, man, you should be proud of it.
Doing it.
Do you ever, because you've got physicals for this one, right? Or either come in. Are they available now to order?
Vinyl is available now. CD's available now. It's all out there. Couple tapes.
Are you going to try to like plug any of it like old school at your live shows, like your stand-ups?
Oh yeah, I do, man. I do. Like, I sell candles at the live shows as well. From I'm definitely selling it, but it's funny because I said this before, but like being a comedian, I feel very fortunate because a comedy audience is just a little bit more supportive than a rap audience. UK rap fans are just, they don't want to buy shit. They're all artists themselves. But
yeah, the issue.
Blogging a bit of wax or whatever.
That's the trouble, man. Like, yeah, most of the UK hip hop audience just happen to be artists themselves, and it's like, and everyone's skint as well, aren't they?
I think it
kind of like speaks volumes that you got it pressed, and you know, on vinyl as well. It means that you must be proud of it.
Definitely.
Limited run. Are you gonna what's
what merch?
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking of, I had a bunch of ideas, but nothing's come to me that's working. I was going to do some state-sanctioned water, like with a label and like call it state-sanctioned water, but I don't know if that would fly off the shelves. The candles. People buy more candles at my shows than music. Candles do well because they fit in with the grimefulness vibe, you know, it all works. But with this, I'm not sure. I was going to do some demotivational tea towels with like demotivational quotes with the font from Moose Solutions on it. Still might do it.
I would buy that, man. Do it.
We'll see. I've got a few ideas.
Have you got any of the motivational quotes lined up?
Well, it was all like shit from just going to be stuff from the album, really. Like, yeah, just like just a few bars. I don't know, like live a life of hoisin. I quite like that as a bar. I don't know.
What does that mean?
Well, it's like you can live a life of sin or hoisin, the plum sauce that's so delicious and thick and probably bad for you. You can live a life of hoisin, just survive on fucking. Like I do, that's right. Probably. It means nothing.
I rate that, man. But some of the ad projects are so good as well. Like when you say right hand man to King Payman, and then it's just like that's my boy.
You know who Payman is?
Yeah, I watched Hereditary. Yeah, and I was guessing it's that like demon from Hereditary, right?
Yeah. You know, you should. I love that film.
Yeah, man. No, it was a good film. Did you watch Midsommar as well?
Midsommar's my favourite horror film.
Is it?
I love it. Because you know why? Because if I was at that retreat, I'd probably be like one of the lads, you know? I'd want to stick around. People would be like, people are disappearing. We're being given drugs against our will. But I'm like, yeah, these Swedish women, they're pretty attractive. I might just see... I'd take my chances and then I'd end up flayed in front of a fucking campfire by the end of it. I'd see myself there.
They basically like told you what was gonna happen in like those drawings, didn't they? Like in the film, it just says, right, this is what's gonna happen. This guy's gonna get like Wicker Man at the end. And it's just like, oh, right, okay, I didn't actually have to watch it, but it's a really cool concept, I think, like, especially having it all like in the daytime as well.
It's a great thing. I like watching that film with someone who hasn't seen it.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the point when the old codgers jump off the ledge, that's good to watch with someone because they're like...
Brutal.
Yeah, I like that shit. It's a good film.
Yeah, man. But yeah, it's I love little kind of like, little kind of Easter eggs like that in the album of all the...
A lot of 90s references, You know, you're not going to find a rapper with more references to the 90s and descriptions of Cunnilingus than me. That's me. I'm the guy for that, yeah?
Oh, man. So have you been watching much, like, aside from movies and stuff, have you been watching much stand-up in your spare time? Or is that something you avoid to do? Or is it something you study?
I don't avoid it, but I have ruined it for myself because I do it and I see it every fucking night. But there's so much... there's so much talent out there. There's so much good stuff. There's a lot of horse shit as well, though. It's a minefield. There's some great comedians about, though, and I know some of them personally.
Do you like Stuart Lee?
I love Stuart Lee.
Did you see his I think it was quite recent where he talked about like cancel culture and like Ricky Gervais. Saying the unsayable, and it's like, well, he by definition it is sayable, and he just does a whole bit where he's just like trying to speak for about 10 minutes. Fucking genius. Got and then go say how Ricky Gervais is the Boris Johnson of stand-up comedy.
I share a bit of his views on that, to be honest.
So who, if you were to say that, you know, I probably asked you this last time, but just for people who are tuning in now, like, who would you say is your kind of main inspiration?
My favourite comedian is Norm Macdonald, I'd say.
Yeah.
I love Norm. Norm and early Jack D, really. That's probably, they're the two, I'd say. Louis C.K. pre-Wank Beast, probably, as well.
Yeah, he's I mean, he started releasing a lot of stuff on his own like website, didn't he? After that,
the Apollo man.
Yeah, it's mad. So, but yeah, I mean, it is. Was he on? He did a Joe Rogan as well, didn't he? Yeah. When he was talking about that. Just a like difficult kind of, I don't know, like it's a weird one, isn't it? Because. I used to watch like Louis all the time, you know, his like show and like his stand-ups, and like some of his stand-ups were so funny just in terms of the concepts he'd have and just like basically just roll with it and ask questions that you think to yourself. They're so like, it's almost like stoner philosophy, but it's like, oh wow, this guy's really like talking sense. And when all that happened, it was just like, oh fuck, like I thought you were one of the good ones, man. But then it's just like, I don't know, it's... I kept thinking like I was wrong. I was kind of always like wrongfully biased because yeah. I was like, oh, Louis, he's like one of the, you know, he's my guy. He's funny. But yeah.
I know. It's like when that guy from the Lost Prophets got done for noncing.
Fucking hell.
Felt sorry for all the people that listened to him for years and years. They got tattoos of the guy. It must be hard to disconnect artists from the art when you're really, really invested.
Exactly, man. R. Kelly, all of that stuff. But yeah.
Exactly.
Fucking people, eh? Fucking people.
There's plenty of comedians out there that don't masturbate in front of women against their will, so...
Yeah, so, you know, enjoy them instead, I guess. Crazy, man. But, like, when it comes to, like, cancel culture, I know we spoke about this before because you said it's important to really, you know, you don't really get to the measure of a person without... listening to what they have to say. You don't have to like necessarily like it, and you can challenge them on it and all of that stuff rather than just like, you know, cancelling them. Is that kind of still something that you know, is that something that you still think now?
Yeah, I think everybody is human, everybody fucks up.
There's man,
opportunity for a bit of redemption and hearing people. I don't think you should just write off people straight away. Some things obviously are pretty unforgivable, but also that said, just because you do some start, like basically I don't think you're guaranteed a platform no matter what you do. You should be accountable for what you do. Like being a comedian or in the public eye or a creative person, it's a privilege, you know, so you can only push it too far if you're going to be completely outrageous and do some...
Well, I guess the most, like, it's, you know, example that springs to mind is Kanye at the moment, you know what I mean? It's like...
That's fucking crazy. But he's so... the thing with it is, it's same with Louis. When you make it, when people are making money from you, you'll be protected to a point until they cannot make money from you, and then they'll just throw you to the wolves. So Kanye's probably, I think he'll probably be all right in spite of what he's doing. So
rich enough and protected by the right people, you mean?
Like Louis, the same thing. He was, that was at the height of his fame when all the allegations were knocking around. His agent were protecting him from the accusers and like silencing people. And then when it all became too much, it's when he apologized. And it was a bit too little too late, really.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's obviously with Kanye things a whole, like, you know, I mean, obviously in principle, it's the same, but there's something up there, isn't there? Like, I mean, did you see the whole Drinks Champs thing and being taken down? And
it's fucking outrageous. But someone has just piped in with, what about someone like Jimmy Carr? And my opinion on Jimmy Carr is, he's a good example of someone that says mean, hateful shit, and he doesn't really have much soul to what he's doing. He's just saying it to say it. Like, they're striking down jokes. They couldn't be funny. It's shocking. But like, why are you saying it? Why are you making jokes about gypsies and the Holocaust? Why? What's the point? Just to just and doesn't mean you should. If there's a reason, then go for it. But he's an example of someone sort of like Gervais that won't, he'll be fine because people think it's like edgy and controversial, even though it's quite boring. Anybody can say something hateful. There's a lot of comedians out there that say mean shit on stage and they misinterpret an audience's reaction as positive because they're like, ooh, or like, oh, like,
yeah,
they think that's encouraging, but it's not. You really want to just be funny. You don't want to, like, when I started, I wanted to maybe not offend, but say stuff that might rile up a few people. But the longer I've gone on, the more I realize that I actually don't want to hurt anybody. I want to bring people along. If I do upset someone, I'm sorry. I'm not. It's never my intention.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's just like, I mean, obviously, a comedy is ultimately subjective, but you can have, you can, you know, take things too far. But then, to your point, when using Jimmy Carr and Ricky Gervais as an example, yeah. So do you think when they started out, they hadn't like found their stride yet? They were probably just like finding that particular brand of comedy because they're both very mainstream, just in terms of like Jimmy Carr, for example, really mainstream comedian. Do you think when he started out, it wasn't necessarily that cutthroat for the sake of it? He actually had a bit more soul, as you put it. And then when he realized he was getting that reaction from the audience, he thought, fuck it, like, this is lucrative. I'm going to carry on doing it.
Yeah, I think it's the second one. I don't think he ever had any soul.
I've found him funny in the past, and like, I'm not gonna sit here and think, oh yeah, Jimmy Carr, like, I've not laughed at his jokes before. I think it's just his, like, his delivery, you know, the setup and everything else has made me laugh in the past. But I can understand that compared to other comedians who, even, I mean, using Louis as an example again, even though, like, fuck that guy for whatever, but the what I liked about his jokes were they were so like unique, and you had to really unpack them, and you had to kind of meet halfway, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely.
Again, that's not everyone's cup of tea, and I understand like why someone like Jimmy Carr would be more appealing on like a, you know, to the general public, I guess. It's just, but then there's some comedians. What's his name? What's the blonde guy? He's really like chipper and quite annoying. He had like a...
Could be anybody.
Ben something.
Ben. Is he British?
Yes.
Ben?
Ben Howard. Is it Ben Howard?
Russell.
Russell Howard, that's the one. Yeah, that guy, like, just stuff like that. It's just really like... And no disrespect, obviously, I don't know. He's probably a really nice guy, but it's... I watch it and I'm like, this is... He's just kind of pandering to the audience for the most Do you know what I mean?
He does his thing. He's doing all right. He's doing a fucking arena tour. He's doing good.
Are you mates?
Nah, I'm not mates.
Sorry, it's very like diplomatic response. Like, I've got no skin in the game, so like whatever. I don't really think it's great.
The crazy thing about comedy is you start with people like, you know, I used to do...
Russell Howard sucks, yeah.
I mean, not a fan. still hoping that one day I'll be able to go on his fucking program. So I'm just trying to keep. you don't know. You never know who is going to blow up or who's going to be shit. Like I was doing shows with Nigel Leung in pub basements a couple of years ago. You know Nigel Leung?
Yeah. Roger. Yeah.
Fucking 3 dates of the Apollo now. He's killing it. Things happen real fast. You never foresee it. So what? Something just takes off. You never know what it will be.
How do you think you would deal with, say if it happened to you and you blew up overnight, how do you think you would handle the fame personally?
Oh, man, I'd love it. I'd go fucking, I'd start whacking off all the time in front of everybody, like Louis. I don't know, man. I feel like, honestly, I would be okay if it was like a gradual thing because you're working towards having a career of some kind. So if good things happen, hopefully I've been around long enough to be able to navigate it and not ruin it for myself. Sometimes people get too much success too early and it's their downfall.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily I've been slogging it out in the trenches for like 12 years, so I'm ready.
Yeah, man, exactly. So you already have that, like... Yeah, you've earned your stripes, or at least you would have done if you blow up. You know, there's still time, man. Do you ever feel like discouraged, or do you love doing it so much that that would never be the case?
I get discouraged every other day. It's a very lonely pursuit. It's a hard game, but everything else, like being on stage and doing jokes and being a comedian, is the greatest job in the world. It is the best thing you could ever want to do. Everything else, the industry, all the other shit, that's unfortunate and quite shit, but that's the payoff, I guess.
Yeah, man. But what's next for you anyway, in terms of, like you said, this might be your last project. As it so happens to be the one you're like the most proud of, so creatively you seem quite content, if that makes sense. But based on, you know, if you do get, you know, if the reception keeps building momentum, would you make another one, and if so, who would you want to work with?
I definitely want to make more in this style, 100%. But discouraged is the right word, because like if it doesn't, the reality doesn't meet the expectation, there's only so many times I can keep doing it. As long as it's fun, though, I'll make music. If I feel like I want to make it, then I'll make it. But like with an end goal in sight, that will probably change if the reaction isn't kind of what I think it should be. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and do you think, I mean, partially, obviously, that is down to just UK hip hop being a very small scene. I mean, in terms of like independent music in general, like independent music, and it's almost like a really kind of well, you know how it is, man. UK hip hop. So it's almost like, as much as you know the product's good, there's only, unless you get it in front of the right people who are receptive to it and who know other people. Do you know what I'm trying to say? It's always going to be difficult for anyone in this game. So it's, I think you really do have to love what you do, especially within UK hip hop. Unless you get some, you know, I mean, you could always, have you tried like touring it as well, or is it something you would like tack onto your stand up rather than touring the album?
I might try and hit a lot of the festivals next year and try and give it a good punt that way. It's on the list, but touring isn't likely as it stands, but maybe one day that would be the goal. I would love to do that.
Yeah. And if money was no object, who would you want to collaborate with? So that could be like features, because I love how there aren't any features on this thing. It's just like, just you and fans, and that's just a testament to it. It's really like, sometimes like, and we've done episodes on this topic in the past, like, can features be a hindrance? Can people over rely on features for clout and all of that stuff, and it kind of overshadows what you're trying to achieve as an artist? But if you could work with anyone, or if you were to get a feature, who would it be and why?
What a great question. My favorite people, I'd want to I could work with anybody, whether it would sound good or not. I'd probably work with Danny Brown. I'd work with Sugar Free, one of my favourite rappers of all time. You ever heard of Sugar Free?
I haven't, man. Every day's a school day. Come on.
But I said Sugar Free. He's like he's a pimp, and he makes music like an actual pimp.
Yeah.
The way he raps is just crazy. It's amazing. So I'd work with Sugar Free. I would love to do a tune with Del the Funky Homo Sapien. He's one of my favourite.
Legend.
Sticky Fingers. That guy's very underrated, I think.
On it.
Yeah, man. But UK... fucking Cass, basically. That's about it.
That guy, man. That guy. Ridiculous. I mean, just...
The best.
Yeah, he's ridiculous. Just the way he kind of conveys a message. You know, obviously he's about it. You can tell he is, but he does it with such, like, humour and tongue-in-cheek. But again, he kind of, you know, the bleak, you know, underbelly of the streets and with, like, his comedic timing and stuff. He's just a genius, man. And I think, like, his whole thing, you know, of being anonymous and stuff is just... It's just so fucking cool. The stuff he was doing with Ed Skrein as well. You know, he did the music videos with him. Boys Will Be Boys, is it?
Yeah, yeah.
The horror video. It's all of that stuff, man. It's just insane.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah. But I'd just love to see more music. But I guess that's kind of part of the allure as well, isn't it? It's like you had to be there. All the media he released, if he releases physical media... It's just like a random like cassette at like a given point of time, and you have to kind of go via like an obscure website to buy it. It's just so fucking difficult, but I respect that. Do you know what I mean? It's just so like so fucking cool.
That's integrity.
But he's good. That's the thing. He's he's not just all kind of style over substance. He's yeah. I really rate Cass, man.
100%.
I think a lot of people in UK hip hop circles sleep on him though because he's not like a lyrical miracle. Do you know what I mean? And it's just like, no, man, like this guy conveys a message better than like most people. He's one of my favorites easily.
2008, Walk in the Park. I was like, this guy's a genius. And people are like, nah, he's dumb. This is stupid. I'm like, nah, you're wrong.
Yeah, you are so fucking wrong. Yeah, man. So obviously you got, you know, some more live shows coming. The album's kind of doing the rounds and still getting kind of feedback on that. Have you been kind of listening to anything else aside from your own album?
I've heard my colleague in Moose Funk Squad, Archetype's album. That's going to be great. That's a really good album. That's coming. Big up Archetype. That's about it.
I was chatting to Archetype. Yeah, he was telling me about all the kind of all the stuff going on behind the scenes about it, like multi instrument. You know, he's doing loads of drumming and stuff on it. And yeah, it sounds really cool, man.
That's the proper album he's been working hard on. So yeah, that'll be good. Big up.
Had a bit of like rap beef with Archetype in a Shock Under Bars contest last year.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember.
He's genius. Yeah. He conveniently goes before he's. come on. I want to hear what you say.
What did he say?
Mick, you'll have to repeat it.
Oh, man. What did you say? I might coming on a different try, like coming in again. Isn't it? It's off the chain. Okay.
If you want, man. I mean, just kind of talking about you with the beef with Archetype, which was pretty entertaining at the time.
Okay, but,
Yeah, I mean, it's just, yeah, that was, that just kind of came out of the blue, really. But I'm glad you were able to make friends afterwards.
Best buds.
Yeah, he's a good guy, isn't he, man?
Yeah.
Sick rapper as well.
Definitely.
Oh, big up Paulie Rich. I don't know. We'll definitely run another Shock on the Bars next year because it's just so like fucking time consuming. The amount of like work that goes into it with no reward whatsoever.
Story of UK rap, man.
Exactly, man. That's why we. But should we? Before we wrap up, is there anything else you wanna talk about? You wanna plug aside from the album?
Mood Solutions, and big up all your graft, man. It's appreciated.
Nah, man. That's honestly anytime. Like, just happy to kind of help out and stuff, and best of luck with it all. It's a sick project. Like, I wouldn't just kind of gas you up. It's like rap I'd like to listen to. You know what I mean? Get sent a lot of stuff, and it's just like, oh, okay, like, I'm not really feeling this, but it's an album that kind of, like, yeah, it clicks, and you're like, a lot of effort went into it. It's a good product, good raps, good production. You know, you can't really argue with it. So, no, big up, man. I appreciate it.
Nice one, man. All right. Give you guys to it. Big up. Have a good evening.
Yeah, peace, man. Take care. All right, big up, everyone, for joining. Mixed Swag is out. The internet was shit. But, yeah, until the next one, peeps.